Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host, Nate Lindberg, and we're talking NXT for November 21st, 2023, right before Thanksgiving. Happy early Thanksgiving, everybody, from me to you, because Kelly's not here to say it first. You know, so there's that, but that's fine. Kelly, hopefully he's out spending time with his daughter, spending time with his family. See, Bruce, I'm not ragging on him this week. I did it last week. But he's out spending time with his family and doing family stuff this week. So Bruce and I are here to talk NXT with you guys. So Bruce, say hey.
Hey, everybody. I'm Bruce Hazelwood. You can find me at BeyondThisBurly253. My report for tonight's NXT is up for you at the Torch on the VIP side so that you can be more able to watch it. Or if you want to get another opinion, you can check out my thoughts running throughout the show.
All right. So normally what we do is we just jump right into the main event. We talk about the main event, then we go to the callers, but then the callers usually just kind of want to talk about the main event. So let's try something different and let's just jump into the phone lines tonight. We're going to go straight to area code 615. I have now started a list of area codes and people. I don't have you written down though, so I don't know who you are, but let me know who you are and what is it you'd like to talk about?
Nate, it's okay. I don't get to call on with you on Tuesday night very often, so you know who I am now probably.
I do now.
It's okay. I'm actually excited because I didn't expect to get off early tonight, so I was like, man, I get to talk to one, two, or all three of the guys. I don't know, but I'll get to talk to some of them, and it's kind of cool. I'm actually kind of excited about it. So, Nate, it's always good to talk
all
to
right.
you. Bruce, how are you guys doing? Good to talk to you.
Doing
you
well.
As well, Sean. You as well, Sean. So I was So you got out of work early. What do you want to talk about? You sound about as pumped up as I am right now, and that's mostly mostly caffeine that's done it for me. So,
well, I'm drinking an A&W cream soda right now. So yeah, caffeine's probably this doesn't even have caffeine, does it? Well, whatever. Who cares? It doesn't really matter now, does it?
So delicious.
Yeah, it is. It is. I just love wrestling. I get pumped talking about wrestling. I mean, why would you not? NXT.
Love it.
I haven't got to watch I haven't got to watch as much as I would like to NXT related. I've been keeping up with your guys' reports and still like watching when I can. But from what I saw, the first thing I wanted to bring up was not the main event, but I will talk about that in a second. First thing I want to talk about was I wanted to bring up the Noam Dar Gable match.
Sure.
I like the Heritage Cup. It's okay. It's not my favorite thing in the world. I mean, it's good. I mean, it's enjoyable. The format, I'm getting used to the format. The more I see of the matches, I'm getting used to the format. It's like, okay, this is different, but it's okay. The match was good. I mean, I really enjoyed the match. But guys, I know you probably you probably thought about this. I hated the finish. I hated it. I hate when WWE... The first thing I hated about it, okay, I hate when he taps out, and then Vic's like, he tapped. It's like, Vic, you know darn good and freaking gosh darn well the clock ran out before he tapped out. They go to this finish way too often, and it makes Vic look like a total dweeb and a moron. And I like
Well,
Vic
we've
shows.
Established
like
many times on the show that Vic is just a real stupid idiot anyway, so...
Who really loves candy. He's always got – I want to know why he's got a bucket of candy all the time. I'm hoping he's giving it out to the audience or he's going to become like me and be diabetic. I'm worried about you, Becky.
No, I mean, like I said, the match itself was good. The finish, I hated it. They just do this way too much, and it just takes me – I'm like, ugh. They ended with that.
So
I wanted to hear what you guys thought about the match and the finish in general,
yeah.
Everything with it.
So yeah, I'll kind of take the match itself. That was great. I mean, Chad Gable, Noam Dar, two amazing technical talents. So I mean, I feel like the match itself just kind of like the technical ability and the story that they put on through the match just kind of like speaks for itself. But I hear what you're saying. I absolutely hear what you're saying. And I think in any other match, I'd be almost. And I even am right now. I'm not sold on the finish, but to the best of my knowledge, they've never done a one-on-one tie. And Bruce, correct me if I'm wrong. They've never done a one-on-one tie with the Heritage Cup before. So this is a different finish for the Heritage Cup, but it's still, like you said, they go to it so often with so many other different stipulations and you know, match types and heck, even just regular one-on-one, you know, singles matches that it doesn't feel like it's different or unique or anything. Cause that was my first instinct too, is I was like, they're going to go to a tie. And I'm like, oh, that, you know, kind of like that figures. And the more I thought about it, I'm like, they've never done it with the Heritage Cup. So there's that. And one thing that I've kind of had a bit of a gripe, and I want to at least preface this with, I love the Heritage Cup, but my gripe has kind of been they've used that same formula back and forth. Oh, he's got one fall, 1-0. Oh, now it's 1-1. Who's going to win? And it, like, last second, for the most part, you know, somebody picks up that second fall. There's been a few times where it's happened, you know, in the middle of that last round, but it's, at least in my memory anyway, it feels like it's always that, you know, the last few seconds where they pick up that last win. I almost just want to see somebody go 2-0 and just sweep it and, you know, not go back and forth. Like that, that was kind of the finish that, you know, I think that's going to be the big finish for the Heritage Cup at some point. And of course you can't necessarily replicate that, at least the height of that, but I was kind of mixed a little bit on the finish in terms of that, but it also advanced some stories as well. And I don't want to take all of the talking points because, Bruce, I'm looking at your report, so I don't want to take up all the talking points. Let me throw over to you, because like I said, this kind of sets up some other stories for like Lash Legend and things like that. So let me throw over to you to kind of finish up and talk about all that stuff.
Yeah, I was a lot more positive on this than you two were, and part of that is that for me,
I don't want it to seem like I'm not positive. It was just like that. It was more of a gripe than anything for me.
Yeah,
to finish.
But I'm still more positive than you two are, and for me, that has to do with one. That has to do with, I think a rounds match is a great way to be able to tell stories throughout in professional wrestling. So the first round, they were within an arm's reach of each other the entire round, just trading holds. And by the last round, they were just trying to beat the hell out of each other, right? They used the first couple rounds to build up to the last two rounds where they were really just going at it. And they weren't trying to do all the technical stuff aside from trying to make them submit. It was really just, you know, stiff strike, big strike, big impact move, and then going for a reversal of the submission, that kind of stuff. So, mm-hmm. I like how the rounds match are able to tell stories, and with those stories, you can. One thing I don't like, okay, with metaphor especially, it comes up is the amount of interference we get, right? And because of the interference, it really it takes away from the story a little bit, but the interference also is a vehicle to extend stories or make new stories. And we see, you know, with Lash Legend, we see with Otis, we see with Maxine Dupri, that there are multiple stories here. They're trying to tell through what they do in the matches and what they do in the post-match. So obviously they're leading to some kind of either Lash Legend versus Maxine Dupri or a mixed tag match or even a faction versus faction match with four of them versus each other. So we'll see how that goes, but that seems to be that direction that they're heading in. The match itself, great match. Beyond the story, of course, with these two, you'd expect there to be some good action, some good technical action. And between this match and the Charlie Dempsey and Eddie Thorpe match, it was a pretty good night for the technical wrestlers in NXT. And, you know, not to say that everyone else on the show doesn't have technical aspects of their wrestling. It's just that those two matches specifically had a lot more technical aspects to it. Now, I do think it would have been odd to have Chad Gable win here, since, this, as Joseph said, it was his first time in a Heritage Cup match, and he really hasn't been associated with anybody in the Heritage Cup sort of realm in any sort of way. But what I did like is that you have Dar retain, you have him still become so associated with it. I just think that one of these days he does need to win these each of his falls clean. And to counter one thing you said, Nate, I believe one of the most recent ones was a 2-0. I just don't remember which one it was, but I think one of the recent ones was 2-0. So it has happened. It just hasn't happened often as you would have liked, I guess, because it would be more memorable, I guess, if it did.
Huh. Now I'm going to have to look that up because I don't know. Anyway, I'll look that up in a minute. But yeah, Sean, let me throw it back to you for any follow-up or for something else.
Yeah, no, and Bruce, you said it. I mean, I like what you were talking about with the story of the match in general, because I think that part was really good, and that's what's that. I just wanted to go back to just the finish of it. Like the story was fine. I enjoyed that part of it. I enjoyed Lash Legend more than, because I hadn't got to see her recently. I saw her at the beginning, and then I kind of missed a lot of the middle, so I'm kind of going with you guys on that. But tonight, I thought she was very enjoyable with what she was doing. I think she looked like she has gotten a lot more comfortable in her own skin and kind of what she's doing. And Otis is great, and Maxine, I think, is. I'm just really enjoying what Maxine's doing. I really am. I didn't think I would, but I really am. She's kind of coming in her own. Yeah, in the ring, she's done pretty well for herself. I've been impressed with that. I'm like, wow, it's really interesting. But so the match was good, and I like Noam Dar, so I'm curious, where they'll continue to go with him with the Heritage Cup. But I guess the next topic I was going to ask you guys about was, again, I haven't been. I know with the Carmelo Trick stuff, but I don't know the exacts of kind of what they've been doing. Other kind of reading your report, but it's hard when you don't get to watch every week and kind of see what's going on. But I like the talking segment with Carmelo and Trick backstage before the match with Briggs. But I was still, I guess, surprised that Briggs got the win, because I don't know what's been going on with Melo. The more I see Carmelo, the more I'm just like, and I know it would hurt, you guys for covering NXT, but I just want him to go to the main roster at this point. I don't know what. I've gotten to watch a lot of stuff he's done, and he's been fantastic. I mean, we all know how good he is. And I know they're letting the Trick stuff play out, and so that's what they're waiting for, is I think the Trick, story to kind of play out, and we'll see where that goes. And I want you guys to talk more about that here in a second. But I just think he needs to hear very soon to go to the main roster and just get up there and show Hunter, and Hunter already probably knows, but just show Hunter what he can do. Because I just think there's so much good that he's going to do once he gets there. But what did you think about the match? I was still surprised Briggs won. So I want to hear what you guys thought about the match itself, having Briggs win, and then more of where you think they're going with Carmelo and Trick and how that's going to play out.
Yeah, sure. So first, the match itself, I'll talk about the match in Josh Briggs and then get into the Melo and Trick stuff and go from there. But the match itself, I thought was pretty good. Probably one of the better matches I've seen out of Josh Briggs.
It was the best match of the night.
Yeah.
You know what? I'll give you that. It was definitely the best match of the night. What the heck was I going to say? For a long time now, we've watched Josh Briggs. We've watched I'm trying to think of the other guy's name.
Brooks Jensen.
Brooks Jensen. Thank you. Wow.
I want to say Briggs Jensen all the time.
Right. No, my former boss is named Bill with another. Yeah. Anyway, and I kept wanting to say his name, and I'm like, that's not it. Josh Briggs has always been the standout. I've talked about it. I think Kelly and Bruce have talked about it too. That he seemed to have a little something. Like, he had that it factor that it almost seemed like, being in a tag team was holding him back. And I kind of liked the fact that JBL talked about that tonight when he selected Josh Briggs. Going way back to the Attitude Era and stuff, like when I first started watching, and the height of like my fandom as a kid was, the Attitude Era, as I think of a lot of people that are in their mid-30s are, and that are still watching wrestling anyway. And I loved the APA Acolytes, like Brooke and Bradshaw. They were like, just, I don't know. I thought they were so badass. Like, and I remember I was actually there in the arena the night that Farouk and Bradshaw broke up. One of them lost a match. I think they lost a match, and I think that's what it was. And if they lost the match, like Farouk had to retire.
It was retired or fired, one of the two. Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of. It was either. I think it actually in the story it was fired, but. And I was in the arena that night, and I remember being like super sad, you know, whatever. But then JBL, he broke out and became JBL, and I've never been a huge fan of the JBL character. I much prefer the rough and tumble Bradshaw character for him, but that's not what got him over. That's not what made him millions of dollars. So whatever. But, you know, so I like the fact that they kind of pointed that out, and it's kind of a similar, and it was a story they were telling for Josh Briggs. Now, whether or not he's going to wind up making millions of dollars and becoming WWE champion, who knows? But I think this is at least a good experiment with Josh Briggs. With part of the reason that I think this is actually, it might even be a bit more of an experiment. And the reason I think it might be just more than an experiment with Briggs is the fact that he did get the win here tonight. Now, Carmelo Hayes right now, he's a star. And I don't think he necessarily needs the win and needs to get into the Iron Survivor Challenge Iron Survivor Challenge to be kind of elevated anymore or anything. I think he's already there and in the eyes of the company, right? He was the one that, you know, helped Cody Rhodes, you know, rehab, and they've called on him for quite a few different things, you know, in front of and behind the camera recently. So I think what's happening is they're using him right now to get people like Josh Briggs over, but the biggest thing is to get Trick Williams over. I don't think Trick is going to go up at the same time as Mello, which is part of the whole reason they're telling this story. But I have a feeling at this point, considering how close we're getting to Stand and Deliver, I think we're going to see the Trick and Mello storyline play out and see it culminate in a match probably between the two of them, but at least involving the two of them to end this story between them, whether it's a feud or their last hurrah together as a tag team. I think it's going to be the former, but and basically, you know, he ends up putting Trick Williams over and then goes up to the main roster. And from there, they hopefully give him, and I'm more confident now with Triple H in charge, but that they give him like the treatment he deserves and he becomes the star that we know he can be up on the main roster. Wow, I talked for a long time. Bruce, let me go over to you.
So even though you talked for a long time, one thing that wasn't brought up and something that Vic Joseph didn't bring up either, I thought it was kind of a bit of misinformation on his part, is that he said that Josh Briggs is not known as a singles wrestler, and he is former Evolve champion. I think two-time Evolve champion, if I remember correctly. So,
you know, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that.
And it's not like Evolve wasn't ever mentioned on NXT. They had shows basically cross-promoted with each other, and they had NXT. The Street Profits were the Evolve tag team champion at one point. So I think
he the final Evolve champion?
I'm pretty sure he was the final one. He was either the final or the second to last Evolve champion before that promotion was folded. So it's not like he doesn't have the singles pedigree behind him. And the reason he was signed in the first place was because of his singles pedigree. So by the guy who used the pedigree, and that was Triple H. So a lot of used pedigree there. But he has the ability, and I think tonight was a reminder. We've seen it a bit in some of the tag team matches, but by virtue of being in a tag team, you're sharing the spotlight, not just with your partner, but with at least two other people in the match. And in NXT, sometimes four to six other people, sometimes even eight other people in the match. So it's a good reminder to folks if they remember Josh Briggs from Evolve, and it's a good introduction to folks who didn't know that Josh Briggs had a singles career before he was in NXT. So, I think this was the best match of the night, the British Rounds match, the Heritage Cup match being right behind it. There was just a lot of good, hard-hitting action, good story being told early. Carmelo Hayes was using his quickness to try and get the better, but Briggs kept using his strength and his size. In the end, it was Hayes' kind of experience that had him going towards the victory, and his ability to, he's been in these situations before, But then he got distracted by Alexis King, so obviously Carmelo Hayes' next feud is going to be Alexis King, probably a match at Deadline. If not that, that's going to main event from NXT, probably the one right after Deadline, mm-hmm. or maybe next week.
Yeah.
So, this was a good match. They extended the story. I was not surprised that Briggs won, only because of the segment earlier in the night between Trick and Carmelo, because
mm-hmm.
it seemed like every bit of subterfuge they had about Hayes being the one that attacked Williams wasn't even there. Like, none of that existed tonight. It just seemed like same old Trick Melo gang from before. And when Hayes, he said, I need to do this myself. Williams was like, I got to go out there because you had my back last week. And then Hayes said one more time, look, I got that. I understand you, but I got to go out there and do this myself. And Trick was just happy for them. Mm-hmm. I understand, no problem. And just kind of smiled. So, to me, once that happened, I said, oh, Briggs is going to win this one. Mainly because, as Nate said, there's no reason for Carmelo Hayes to be in this match, right? Out of everybody that was announced for qualifiers so far, he's the one that had no reason to be in this match. So there was that, but then the segment between those two just really cemented the fact that Briggs was going to go over here. And the announcement, I put in our group chat over the weekend when JBO made the announcement that, because the second match he announced was Davenport versus Hale, Blair Davenport versus Thea Hale, and I said in our chat, I'm calling it now, Blair Davenport's winning the whole thing. So that's right now. I don't even care who the last people are that's going to be picked, unless it's someone like, a Kairi Sane or something. But if that's the case, aside from that, I think Blair Davenport is going to win the Iron Survivor Challenge. And so I guess that kind of spoils that segment for later. But regarding Hayes and Williams, if you remember, Nate, I've been saying for months that I feel like the ending spot for these two is a singles match at Stand and Deliver. Williams goes over.
Yeah.
They have the moment in the middle of the ring where Hayes puts up Williams' arm in victory, and they end the show with Williams. I thought it was going to be for the NXT Championship, the Men's NXT Championship, but, it's not going to happen here unless somehow Hayes gets it back real quick. But they're going to have that moment for Williams, I believe, at Stand and Deliver, and then Hayes is going to go from there. I think they might do a little preview for Hayes at the Royal Rumble where he's an entrant. And then that's a little tease for people on Raw and SmackDown for when he does eventually go up after Stand and Deliver.
Yeah, no, I think you're pretty much spot on. I would not be surprised whatsoever if we saw him in the Rumble and then Stand and Deliver. And yeah, we've definitely talked about him having that match at Stand and Deliver, singles match between them. I know at one point we talked about it for the NXT title. At one point we talked about it for the North American title. At this point, yeah, it looks like it's probably just going to be like an attraction match between the two. But God, what a match it's going to be. John, let me throw it back to you. I am going to say, and this really doesn't necessarily apply to your question, Sean. You can still take as much time as you need. We are going to wind up having a bit of an abridged show tonight, as has happened to me in the past on this show. I unfortunately am on call for work. I'm almost out of the on-call rotation. We've hired some other people, and I'm almost off of it. But I do have a couple things that I got to take care of that I just got alerted for. So there's a few more things we're going to cover. We got a few emails we're going to cover. Probably get another half hour or so left in the show, but we're probably going to wrap up a bit early. Anyway, with that bit of housekeeping out of the way, throw it back to you, Sean.
No, I totally get it, man. That's on call. Oh, that's a pain in the booty. I can tell you that right now. That sucks. It's awful. But anyway,
yep.
I'll bring up the main event because you guys always talk about it early, so I'll just kind of bring it up here because I wanted to give you my thoughts on it from when I was watching it. From the little bit I've seen of Lyra, I've liked her so far. She's coming along for me. I think her matches are getting better. But I was thinking about this more from the Xia Li perspective. Like, from what we had seen, we hadn't seen really anything from her, or they just hadn't given her any character development. I mean, it really wasn't anything there. It's not that she's not talented. It's not any of that. We just really hadn't seen anything that was like, oh, she can be a player, in the women's division. And then she had the really good match with Becky last night on Raw, and it's like, okay, they're doing something with her. And then they had her lose, which normally you think, okay, that's fine. I mean, it's Becky. She can lose to Becky. But then it's like, I don't know if she should be losing. And then tonight, they have her attack Lyra before the match or right as she's coming out, which at first I had mixed emotions. First I'm like, okay, why would you do that? You're getting a title opportunity. But obviously, I think in her mind, quote-unquote mind is thinking, I can weaken her before the title match, and then I can beat her there. And so she supposedly weakens Lyra. Now, from Lyra's perspective, it's great. She battles from behind, and she wins. But for Zaya, you're building her, supposedly building her up, and now she's lost to Becky on Raw, and she's lost to Lyra in a title match, NXT title match, the next night. So I wanted to get your perspective on Zaya Lee. Do you think this really hurts her because they're supposedly building her up with a big kick? You know, she's knocking people out, and then she's losing. So does that help her? And then, you know, what do you think they've done with Lyra and kind of where do you think the trajectory they're on with her? And I just wanted to say, guys, real quick, happy Thanksgiving to both of you guys. I always enjoy – I've been a Torch member, for you guys to know, for a long time. I always enjoy everything. Wade's giving me the platform. You guys give me a platform to be able to do what I love to do, and that's just talk about wrestling. So I really enjoy that. I hope you guys enjoy time with your families. And, Nate, I hope you don't have to do too much work tonight, man. You guys are the best. Thank you for taking my call, as always.
Hey, no problem, man. No problem. Thanks to you as well, man. Thanks, you know, and happy Thanksgiving. It's always good to have you on the show. And I hope I won't be doing too much work tonight. I shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. It's some... I can put it off for a little bit. That's why I don't have to, like, just be like, Bruce, you're by yourself right now. Sean, like I said, enjoy the holiday, man, and we'll talk to you. We'll talk to you at some point when you're able to get out of work a little early again.
Sounds good, man. Appreciate you.
All right, take care. Bye. So, all right, let's talk a little bit about that. So, wow, the question just completely escaped my brain.
Riley.
Zaya Lee, thank you. Okay, so I'm back. Here we go. So the main event tonight. I personally really enjoyed this match. I thought, you know, it was a good match between the two. With Zaya, I did not think she had any chance of winning this match. You know, we saw some great character development out of her over the last handful of weeks here in NXT. And Sean, you may not have seen, I know I've already pipped you in mute, but you may not have seen the last couple of weeks. I think you said that already, but they've had some character development with her with some really cool vignettes. There was like a tea ceremony last week that she did, and Lyra Valkyria kind of played more the heel than anything. I thought she came off a little bit heelish and kind of pretentious from coming away from that angle. And Zaya almost seemed a little bit more noble, but that's neither here nor there. They're still giving her that they are still giving her a push and all of that. I think what they're doing is creating a heel. They were creating somebody for Lyra, and they're trying to give her a little bit of like pomp and circumstance, if you will, by putting her up against Becky. Just the simple, like you said, there's no harm in losing to Becky, right? Like Becky is one of the biggest stars in the company, not just the women's division, but I mean the company. So really, no harm in losing to Becky. If you're getting FaceTime, you're getting on TV in front of a national audience on Raw, which is great, especially for her who has had so many different start and stop pushes over her NXT career. So I think that's I think that's fine for her. But yeah, I didn't think. Especially from the segments last week, I didn't think that she had any chance of winning the title. I mean, Lyra, she's still fledgling into her championship run here. I didn't really think they'd be hot-shotting the title or anything like that quite this soon. So I think they were just trying to create a good, solid heel for Lyra, to kind of overcome as her first obstacle as champion, but just to add to the women's division, potentially maybe even on Raw too. Like we may wind up, because it seems like they're much more apt to kind of allow NXT talent and main roster talent to kind of coexist together. I know they're doing the same thing on Raw and SmackDown too here and there, but so I don't know, maybe we'll end up seeing this kind of new incarnation of Zaya Lee where she's got this really strong kick and she's knocking people out and she's got this mean streak where she's attacking people before matches and after matches and things like that. But I don't think that they were building her to the level of where they want like Lyra Valkyria to be. They were kind of looking to build her and make her interesting and kind of a viable opponent for her. But I think in order for them to do that, they would have – I wish they maybe put another, like, 2 or 3 weeks into it. And maybe the match with Becky happened a week ago and not last night. Because having two back-to-back losses two nights, not the greatest. Not the greatest look, I guess. But Bruce, on the main event.
Yeah, in my report, I wrote that with Zaylee losing to the person that Lyra Valkyrie defeated to become champion just last night, and then losing tonight to the champion, it pretty much firmly places her in the category of this is pretty much as far as you're going to go, right? And not to say they're on the same level, but you look at someone like Jay White in AEW and carrying around the world championship for a while. But he went into this match on Saturday, was it, against MJF, after MJF had already participated in a match earlier in the night and during that match had hurt his leg. And he still lost. And so a lot of the talk coming out of Saturday was, well, now how are you supposed to take Jay White seriously if he couldn't beat MJF with all the favors going in his way? So that's what I see here with Zia Lee. And again, they're not on the same level. I'm not even the biggest Jay White fan, but I feel like how they put Jay White in AEW has not been very the best use of his skills. And I think that's been evident in how we have, you know, something like Saturday night. Zia Lee, this iteration of her character, this is where she's going to be. If she, we've seen people, like you said, JBL was someone we never thought would be a singles person, then he became a multi-time singles champion, including a WWE championship, right?
Wesley was someone who
we never saw. I mean, if you're looking at someone who was a singles wrestler and then we didn't really see it and they became something, I mean, Cody Rhodes, he was Stardust and then he left and he came back and look at him now.
Yeah.
He's leading War Games and everything. So for me, I don't think that this means Zia Lee can't go anywhere within the company. I just think that this version of her character won't be able to go as far. The character development we saw, I think, is a good sign, I guess, would be the best way to put it, for her moving forward, because it at least gives an indication that they see something in her, at least try something with her. And maybe they showed her enough throughout those vignettes and throughout the match here that they move forward with her in a more prominent manner, as you said, maybe on Raw or SmackDown. So I hope that's the case for her. And if that's not the case, okay, well, at least she got this moment in the limelight and she got the title match and she got her match with Becky Lynch on Raw, which is still the flagship show. So even though SmackDown kind of gets the better of it, I mean, Raw's still considered the main sort of WWE brand. So at least she got that. The match was fine. Valkyria, you know, I like her work. I do like how they played into the earlier attack a lot during the match tonight. I think that was really well done. The head and neck area, Zia Lee kept attacking it and making sure that it was targeted and really trying to work that spot. And eventually Valkyria worked out some counters and some reversals to make sure that that wasn't an issue anymore for her. So all in all, and again, as Vic Joseph said, this was her first title defense, and you don't want to be the champion that loses your title right away, right? So,
trick,
Kane's first WWE championship.
Yeah.
So, aside from that, I think for Lyra Valkyria, we're probably not going to see her on TV, and probably not even going to see her in any sort of vignette until after the Iron Survivor Challenge and Deadline, because of, I mean, there's really nothing for her to do or anyone to call out because of the fact that, well, she just took out her challenger and there's no challenger set up because they're waiting for the Iron Survivor Challenge to happen. So, yeah, give Valkyrie a couple weeks off. Zia Lee probably goes back to Raw, and Blair Davenport is the next one to face Lyra Valkyria.
I mean, that all sounds good to me. I would not complain whatsoever about seeing Blair Davenport either, well, just in the main event, but potentially even with the main, with the title around her waist. I'd be totally fine with that. All right, let's go over to the mailbag here, and we'll hit first. We'll go to an email from Azan in St. Louis. Hey, NXT gang. He's got three questions here. The first one says, NXT skits tonight make me wish Raw and SmackDown did skits again. They're enjoyable, and they give me something different to watch instead of matches and promos. That's, I guess, not a question, more of a comment, but we'll talk about it. How do you guys feel about Johnny Wrestling and Bronson Reed's homecoming to NXT next week? Speaking about Johnny, does Metaphor feel more like The Way every week? Actually, I think that's a pretty good comparison. Despite being a tag team, I always thought that Josh Briggs could be a breakout act, and you should watch his work in Beyond, which we've actually already talked about that, and we agree. So although we said Evolve, but Beyond too, there we go. And to give him, to give you credit, Bruce said Evolve. I didn't bring up the ball. It was Bruce. But no, okay, so yeah, so, you know, the skits, I feel like NXT has done a pretty good job with their programming recently, and they've got a decent mix of backstage segments and video packages and non-wrestling segments, I guess I should say. I feel like tonight was a little heavy on them. I could have maybe done without as many, but that said, like, I think they're doing a really good job with them. And Raw, SmackDown, yeah, we don't see things quite as much like that on the main roster. And I don't know. I feel like they're hit or miss, like, on the main roster, just because of the way they kind of present Raw and SmackDown as more of a, I guess, variety show than, you know, a straight up wrestling show, which kind of is more of the presentation of NXT. But yeah, I'd be for that. And then who else is coming back in that four way next week? We had Johnny Wrestling,
Cameron Grimes. Yeah, left
Thank
out of his own email.
Yeah. And like, I knew there was a third one getting left out, and I can't believe I forgot about Cameron Grimes too. I'm actually very excited to see that next week. Wesley has to face, I believe it's a fatal four-way, correct?
Fatal four-way.
Yeah, yeah,
I was
hoping
it'd be a gauntlet match because that plays well more into the Wesley
character. Because immediately I was going to say gauntlet match because that's what I was hoping for too. And then I said, no, I think it's a fatal four-way. So he's going to be facing Johnny Gargano, Cameron Grimes, Bronson Reed. I'm happy to see Bronson Reed come back to NXT, but I am ecstatic to see Cameron Grimes and Johnny Gargano back in the NXT ring. I was talking about this with Wade on the post show for Raw, not last night, but last week. Like, it breaks my heart that DIY's music hit and, you know, on Raw. And even though it's not their old Crimson Heart theme, it's some new crappy theme that doesn't deserve a pop anyway. There is no pop for DIY. There's no pop for Ciampa or Gargano. So, I don't know. We gotta fix that. We gotta fix that on the main roster. But I'm gonna get my Gargano pop next week, so that's awesome. And obviously Cameron Grimes. It's Cameron Grimes, man. We're gonna get to see him back in NXT. I very much enjoyed everything he did throughout the pandemic era with, you know, Million Dollar Man and all of that. Matter of fact, I was just talking about the Million Dollar Man stuff to somebody like 3 days ago. On Azan's email.
So while earlier I was higher on the opening match compared to you and Sean, I'm going to be more down on the video segments than I think you and definitely Azan. I thought there were too many. I would have traded out at least one, if not two, for a post-match in-ring interview or at least one more backstage interview with Mackenzie Mitchell. And the thing with that is also these segments weren't that good. So I didn't really enjoy the Tony D'Angelo Chinese.
That Von Wagner segment was a masterpiece.
Masterpiece in making me laugh when I'm not trying to laugh, maybe. But yeah, I wasn't a big fan of the family segment with D'Angelo and Sachs. I still don't know the cousin's name. I don't even know if they've actually said her name on TV yet. But it's really funny to me how much of that voice she puts on for this character and how deep she makes it. It's just kind of It's funny in an unintentional way.
If the character's name is not Maria, I will be very surprised.
You're Italian. You're Sicilian? Italian?
I am a quarter Sicilian, a quarter Italian.
Okay, so you're a little bit of both. Well, you would know better than me because I am not. So I just didn't like that too much. I do kind of chuckle at the fact that they weren't really in a parking lot, but they're going out to where they probably were parked, and then they got jumped by Angel Garza and Humberto Carrillo. So that was kind of funny. And it was, you know, they set that up earlier in the night, which was fine by me. So we have a tag title match next week. I also, like, that Von Wagner, Mr. Stone segment was just, when he said, when he brought the brownies in, and what was the exact line that he said? I need to find this. Because it had me.
It was like, rolling. I think it was some of them got eaten in the car.
He was like, I got some brownies. I love the brownie, or I love me some brownies. And I just started, I inadvertently just out loud just cackled, and it just came out of me. And like, this segment and the stuff with the kids and Vaughn encouraging them to be bullies, essentially. And just it was a lot. And if that was really Mr. Stone's wife, kudos to her for putting up with this and how long it took to record, because this was not necessarily a masterpiece in the way you're thinking, but yeah. And then I think there was another one. The only one I think that was okay.
It was like a Botchamania masterpiece.
Yes, there you go. Yeah. They had the Dragunov Corbin thing, and my issue with that is we basically only heard Corbin talk the entire time, narrating the video as we see Dragunov doing stuff. I would have liked to have heard from Dragunov, aside from the recorded voices that the recordings of him speaking that they had put into the video, but it did have that good quality that you expect from WWE, really using the words of Corbin about being a solid, you know, the champion's life is a solitary life, and you see Dragunov going to an apartment by himself, and the only thing he has that he cherishes is that championship, while Corbin shows his mansion, his expensive car, he gets to kiss his wife every morning, all this stuff, and I like that. At least, you know, the motivations we see from Corbin, if he becomes champion, you would think, well, wouldn't that solitary life happen for you? But he also mentioned the fact that Dragunov is away from his family because they're not in the U.S. and he gets to see his wife every day. So even if he was champion, he'd still have that. I think there were too many. And I think of what they did choose, only one was really a hit and the other weren't that great. I do feel like, you know, maybe it was last week or the week before, they had a post-match in-ring interview with somebody. And we were like, yes, bring this back, because you get that emotion, you get that intensity, you get the breathing. And this is what you see in I know you don't like sports too much, but when they go into halftime, after a game, you get the interview with the reporter, and they're always huffing, they're always puffing, they're always got the adrenaline going. They might say something they regret later in terms of calling out an opponent or something because, you know, they're so hyped. Bring some of that back. And they used to do this a lot more. You know, I'm pretty sure when we were kids in the 90s, WCW especially would do these interviews after matches. And I would like to see more of that rather than relying so much on these video segments, which I understand, as you said, Raw's a variety show, but so is NXT. NXT really is the place where, because it's developmental, they're going to try things, right? That's the whole point. And a lot of these video segments are to try things, but if you're going to try things, you're going to have hits and misses. And tonight, unfortunately, there were just a lot of misses, in my opinion, when it came to the videos and the vignettes.
That's very true. I would agree with you there. I think on the whole, I think NXT has done a pretty good job with vignettes, but yeah, like the more you started talking about it, I was like, yeah, like the family segments, they were not that good. The Von Wagner segments were amazing, but for all the wrong reasons. You know what? If I invited somebody into my home, if I had kids, and if I had a home, and I invited somebody into my home, they started like talking to my kids in the way that Vaughn did, like just kind of like that over the top, fake, like nice way. I might call the cops.
Oh, just the way I
don't know.
Oh, sausages, no asparagus. Yeah, asparagus is gross.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, oh, man. I know they're trying to go for, like, almost, like, wholesome, not quite Leave It to Beaver, but like, you know, something in that vein. But my God, I'm hoping they wind up explaining it away that it was like brain damage from surgery or something. I have no idea, but wow. Wow. Yeah. Vignettes and stuff. All right, let's go over to an email from Kevin Catani. As we get one from Kevin every week, we appreciate it, buddy. Appreciate it. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I thought tonight was a solid episode of wrestling and story building. As much as I want Noam Dar to get his, I like the story they continue to tell him and they continue to tell with him in this Heritage Cup. My Christmas wish is for baby faces the world over to learn the necessity of having a few buddies to help even the odds. A fool's errand, I know. That said, Gable looks good, and I love the attempted seduction of Lash by Otis. He just wants somebody to love. Yeah, he's just a big ball of love, man.
Yeah, good taste.
He does, doesn't he? I'm liking this year's build for the Iron Survivor Challenges. On the men's side, I'm very intrigued by the Briggs win. I know Melo doesn't necessarily need the win, but I hope they work to continue to elevate him some, considering who's already in the match. Plus, the Stratton tie-in adds a new wrinkle to the story. What do you think his role will be in that match? And what do you think this signals moving forward? Is he the Shawn Michaels of the tag team? My last comment comes from a passing comment Vic made during Charlie Dempsey's match. I'm paraphrasing, but it's something along the lines of he comes from a regal background or upbringing. Good stuff, if you ask me. Thanks, as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. Professor Kevin P. Catani, PhD. You know, I don't know why. I have no idea why, because he looks just goddamn like him, but I always forget that Charlie Dempsey is the spawn of our good friend William Regal. I don't know why, but he is, and I don't think I picked that line up because I wouldn't have been thinking about that, but that's some good stuff. That's some good stuff. I love little hints and things like that. I'm sure they've probably might have said, well, Lexus King didn't really show up too long here tonight. But yeah, so we already talked a little bit about, you know, the Melo stuff. I don't think he's going to have an involvement in the match at all at this point. I think it's, and if he does, maybe, but hold on, Trick didn't make it into the match, right?
Into the Iron Survivor Challenge?
Or did he?
Yeah.
I can't remember. He isn't. Okay. So maybe we see, so I take that back. Maybe we see him have some involvement and cost Trick the match or something like that, and which sets them up for match, you know, coming up down the line, like Stand and Deliver or whatever. Actually, I don't think there's a pay-per-view between, or PLE between Deadline and Stand and Deliver, at least one on a Saturday.
They'll probably have the St. Valentine's, no, whatever it's called, New Year's Evil, whatever, as a
New Year's
as a
Evil.
PLE light, probably on a Tuesday.
Yep,
maybe
that's
a 2-week
right.
One, but yeah.
Yep. So yeah, we might have something like that. But in terms of like an actual PLE on a Saturday or a weekend, whatever day they decide to do them, because I feel like they just keep flopping back and forth. Yeah. So yeah, there we go. There, I think that's kind of what they're building to for that. Yeah, I don't really know if I have much more to talk about with that. Do you have anything to kind of add to Kevin's email?
What was the first part of his email again? I already talked about
Noam Dar. And you know, he talked about like, you know, felt Gable looked good. He liked the seduction of Lash by Otis. And also talking about he wishes that baby faces would learn to bring their buddies to the ring.
Yeah, I mean, that's been a thing in pro wrestling for, I mean, decades, right? So
yeah.
Always got to have the noble baby face and whatever, but
I think he kind
of
said that more as just like a guy, you know. Like,
yeah. But then Raw last night, you know, they get their fifth, they even the odds, and it's going to be Randy Orton, right, I guess. So, yeah, I don't have too much more to add because we already discussed Gable, Dar, everything, Alpha Academy and Metaphor. We discussed Hayes Williams. I think we're good to go from there.
All right, cool. So I do have to start kind of running for the hill. So let's, I'm going to go ahead through your report here and see what we haven't talked about yet. We just talked about Charlie Dempsey. Charlie Dempsey versus Eddie Thorpe. Dempsey had Drew Gulak. I do that more often than you think. Drew Gulak and Miles Bourne by his side in his corner there. Eddie went over 3 minutes and 57 seconds, but we did wind up seeing him get beat down and attacked after the match. But I thought this was, it was a good match. Obviously short, so it's not like they had a whole lot of time to really show off what they can do, but they certainly did. They showed off quite a few different technical moves here that between the two, and I like this feud between. I don't think they've named Gulak stable yet, but or if they,
it's another catch point, basically.
Yeah, it's basically exactly catch point, or even kind of to a looser extent, Diamond Mine, just kind of like the heel version of Diamond Mine. Anything on Eddie Thorpe and Dempsey?
Yeah, like I said earlier, a good technical match. Thorpe got the victory, but the heels got the heat afterwards. My thing is, what is your plan with Eddie Thorpe? Because he had that interview with Mitchell in the back last week where, he won the strap match against Dijak, but he was the one that had to spend a couple weeks recovering while Dijak qualified for the Iron Survivor Challenge, right? So what is your plan for Eddie Thorpe moving forward? And the post-match beatdown, you gave him the victory, but the post-match beatdown doesn't necessarily make me too enthusiastic or too optimistic, I guess would be a better word to choose here, about what you have planned for him because of, the nature of that beatdown. They're really working that left arm, so maybe, the left arm is going to be something that he has to overcome in the future going forward, and then he does overcome it eventually. But it's just something that I'm wondering after this, because there is something there with Thorpe. And because he came from New Japan Dojo, but he has an identity and a character, and it's defined, and he's good in the ring. He can bring it. So for me, I want them to actually have something laid out for him. And I'm hoping that, they can get him towards at least the North American Championship level here soon. And then from there, go even more. But, Gulak and Bourne and Dempsey, they can take the loss. It's fine. Their stable is more than who's a good example that I could equate them to? Like, they're just one of those stables where they can lose and it's fine, but you're still gonna take them kind of seriously because of their skills and their talent, right? Like a Blackpool Combat Club, I guess, to a certain extent in AEW, right?
Yep.
So that's basically what we have here in NXT. And good match. I wish there was more time that they were given. A lot of technical aspects to it. But my big question is just about Eddie Thorpe and what their plans are for moving forward.
Yeah, no, I agree. What I think personally is there, or at least I hope, not necessarily think, I guess it's more of a hope, is that once the NXT North American title is off of Dominic, and, I'm assuming Wesley is going to wind up winning that title back. We'll talk about that in a little bit. I'm assuming he's going to wind up winning that title back at Deadline. So I'm kind of wondering if, we then see Eddie Thorpe get in the mix a little bit because, Wesley did a lot of those open challenges. So maybe he answers an open challenge. That way he can still do a face versus face match. And it's, there's a reason for it. And it's, doesn't seem super weird. I'm kind of wondering if maybe that's where they go, but I agree. I think there's certainly something there with that character. I don't know what the ceiling is on it, I almost said heavily gimmick. It's not heavily gimmick. Those are the poor choice of words. But where it does have, kind of a gimmick surrounding it, I don't know if it goes above like North American title level, but I'm sure if they wanted it to, they could. Maybe he can drop some of the gimmicky aspects a little bit. Or maybe he doesn't even have to, because where it is kind of heritage and things like that, as I'm speaking, I'm making up my mind here, where it kind of does revolve around his heritage and all that. Rey Mysterio and there's plenty of other characters that celebrate their heritage. So maybe I was wrong right there. Maybe there is more of a ceiling there, but I think it might be a little bit harder for that character than most, but we'll see. All right, let's keep going back. Let's go to Blair Davenport versus Thea Hale. This was for the Iron Survivor Challenge. That is so hard for me to say for some reason. Iron Survivor Challenge qualifying match. We saw Blair Davenport go over, as we talked about a little bit earlier, to qualify. This match, I mean, I enjoyed it. I mean, it's I think Thea, like, she's still got some ways to go in the ring, but I love everything she's doing right now. So I give her a huge pass, for multiple reasons, partly her age, but also, you know, I think she's developing this character really well right now and kind of picking up on a lot of different nuances about this guy. Like she's still hyped and excited, but when like JC shows up and or JC says something, you know, she'll just, her demeanor immediately changes, the look on her face changes. So there's a lot of nuances that I really like about Thea Hale right now, and what she's kind of bringing to this newer incarnation of this character. But yeah, you know, like I said, decent enough match. I feel like I had something else that I wanted to talk about with it, so I'm going to think about it and throw it to you.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Thea Hale, and I think the thing that overlaying all of this is what's going on with Chase U. This was the other segment I forgot, the video segment, the kind of over-the-top Dateline-style variation of the scandal and all that. This was the one other segment I was thinking of in terms of it was just a bit too much for me today. Like I said, over the weekend, I said Blair Davenport's been the whole thing. Her winning this match, not a surprise to me. It would have been a surprise if she had lost. So I really like the fact that she went over here. And she went over pretty strong, using the Kamigoye. But what was I going to say? It would be a shock to me if she doesn't end up winning the Iron Survivor Challenge again, no matter who else is added. She, I think, is... I did say if you're going to have Valkyria versus Davenport, you want to have that for later and take Davenport away from Valkyria. But maybe what they see in Valkyria is enough for them to want her to move her. I mean, she got the rose from Becky Lynch. She was on Raw. She has that main roster audience that has seen her before. Maybe they think that she can add something on Raw or SmackDown. And if that's the case, okay, cool. But I do think if Davenport's going to be in the match, then she has to win. Because if she doesn't, then she unfortunately has the capability of turning into another Dijak, where you basically lose all your feuds in big matches, and you'll get into them, like you'll get into those big matches, but you'll never be the winner, right? So I hope for Davenport that's not the case, because again, she's something that's a lot different in this current women's division in terms of, you know, you have people with size like Electra Lopez, like Lash Legend. But what you don't have really is people being able to channel that size with their skill. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that she does come from that New Japan background. She Stardom and working in Japan and having done all that. So she just has a lot more experience than a lot of the women in NXT right now. And I think that shows when she is in the ring. And she, I think, would be a great heel to build your women's division around the heel champion, because to me, and this could just be me, but I find the main titles more interesting and more engaging when you have a heel, a dominant heel, who's being chased by a plucky, an underdog, or even just a pure baby face, right? So to me, there's no one better right now as a heel in the NXT Women's Division to lead that charge than Blair Davenport. And in the future, someone like Willow Vice. So I do think that they're not going to be able to resist the temptation to have her become a face.
Stone Cold Steve Austin was always the best incarnation of his character when he was chasing the title. So or at least for the Austin McMahon stuff. And then he went heel and Alliance, and it got weird. But, you know, that – you know what I mean. Anyway, I hope I helped you make your point. Okay, so we're going to – I'm going to throw a few different segments your way. We'll talk about what you want, and then we're going to have to wrap up, unfortunately. So there's my tab with the report. Okay, cool. So there was the Wesley in-ring promo where he was coming out kind of to talk about himself and all that. Dominic Mysterio wound up coming out, and they had a bit of a back and forth. Kind of talking about North American title, if he winds up being able to go through three other former North American champions — he didn't mention them at the time, but if he was able to go through three other North American champions, then and only then will he get a shot at Deadline for the North American title. As we discussed a little bit earlier tonight, those three returning North American champions are Johnny Gargano, Bronson Reed, and, Cameron Grimes. Wow, it's the second time tonight. It's the second time. Cameron Grimes, I'm sorry, buddy. I'm so sorry. But, man, you've been out of sight, out of mind for so long. I don't want to forget about you, buddy, but I did. I'm looking forward to that. And what I really want to know is how Dominic Mysterio, what strings did he have to pull to get the three of them to like buy plane tickets and fly to Florida? I don't know. It just seems weird. Like, but anyway, that's fine. I'm being nitpicky and
for Kevin Graham's
yeah, whatever. TV. Yeah, I guess just to get some TV time, right? But we got the Wesley in-ring promo there with, setting up for that match. We also have, I'm going to talk about matches. We had the Josh Briggs goes over Carmelo Hayes, as we talked a little bit about earlier, 12 minutes, 29 seconds to qualify for the Iron Survivor Challenge, which was a fantastic match. We also had Idris Inoue and Malik Blade versus Angel Garza, Humberto Carrillo in a tag match where Garza and Carrillo go over in about 5 minutes and 30 seconds there. And that kind of set up for a couple other segments with the family later on in the night. So I'm going to throw to you there. And if there's anything that I also didn't bring up that you want to talk about, feel free, and we'll wrap things up.
What I liked about the Inoue Blade Garza Cardio match, I mean, not the fact that they came right back from break and they're going into it, but what I liked is that Joseph mentioned, hey, this match was originally booked for later, but because of the attack on Xia Li,
yes,
and the match not happening, we had to move this up. That's those 5 to 10 seconds he did to make that change. That should happen every week for any sort of thing that happens like this, for any match that wasn't advertised ahead of time. It doesn't take that long. It was really easy to do, and it added context to why they looked so kind of hurried while they were there just before the match started, right? So I think that was a good point for Vic, which is rare. This was your standard match, you know, long heat segment. The heels went over clean afterward. So one of the few clean finishes from tonight. Valkyrie is Xia Li, another one of those. And I think that was it, because unless you count, you know, Gable getting the tap out during to get one fall during the Heritage Cup match as a finish, but the whole match finish, of course, was different. And then Wesley, Dominic Mysterio, the one thing you forgot to mention was that if Wesley loses either the match next week or loses the eventual title match, should he emerge victorious next week, he can never challenge for the title again. I'm assuming while Dominic Mysterio is still the champion. So that is the big caveat here. And I think we just had this with Nathan Frazer in the Heritage Cup as well, if I remember correctly.
Yes, we did.
So we're getting a couple of these, which I think is good for when you have so many matches between two wrestlers over the same prize. I think it's a good step in the right direction here for them. But it also leads me to believe that Wesley is going to regain his title and Dominic Mysterio is finally going to go back to Raw or SmackDown. I guess Raw, that's Judgment Day, is basically... Well, he'll be there full-time, I should say, instead of go back because he's already been back. But that aside, I think that next week's match, the Fatal 4-Way, is going to be in the running for one of the best TV matches that NXT has put on this year, mostly because I don't think you can have a match involving these four and not have a fantastic match. Sure, oh, God, it'll probably be a bit choreographed at times. Sure, it might be a bit spot fest, especially Cameron Graham's going to go out there and have something to prove with him being off for so long. I do really like the fact that Bronson Reed is returning after having a bit of a sustained push on Raw. Winning matches, looking dominant. Even when he loses, he's looking dominant. And Johnny Gargano, as you said, it's been kind of disappointing, not just the fact that the music changed, but that they're not getting any reaction. And this is going to be a good way, I think, of reigniting Johnny Gargano, not just to NXT folk, but Johnny Gargano in general, and be a good thing for both him and Tommaso Ciampa moving forward, because where they were always home, where they always felt home, was NXT, and I think just coming back and being able to experience that again is probably going to be one of those, oh, I just needed to have that one night, now I feel, you know, just fine kind of thing. So I'm really expecting that next week's match is going to be just a standout match between these four gentlemen, and that Wesley eventually at Deadline will be the one to overtake and become the North American champion again after he defeats Dominic Mysterio.
I feel like we've at least seen Wesley and Cameron Grimes face off in the past, but I don't think we've seen Wesley go against Bronson Reed and Johnny Gargano. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to this for all of the reasons that you outlined. I mean, Cameron Grimes, we were such a big fan of his on the show here when he was in NXT. We still are, but it's not like he's showing up on TV or anything for us to really fanboy over. So really looking forward to that. Bronson Reed, like you said, he's having a great run right now. You know, kind of as a, you know, in this kind of incarnation of his character, kind of a monster. So, which means always been kind of touted as, but I feel like they're finally getting there with him. And Gargano's one of my favorite wrestlers, like active wrestlers in the business right now, him and Ciampa. So I'm just happy he's going to be able to get a pop next week and I'll be able to experience it. So with that, it's going to bring us to the end of our show, finish up a little bit early. I know there's a few segments we didn't hit, but blame my CEO because she wants me to do something. Anyway, I am Nate Lindberg. You can check out the things I do, natelindberg.com, for all the stuff I do for the Torch. There's links up there and all the stuff that I do in the world of Deej Time, which is my YouTube channel where we take a therapeutic look at role-playing games. So you can check all that stuff out there. I also will be doing a hits and misses for a Deadline. I'm not doing them for every NXT episode anymore, but I am doing them for PLEs. So I'll be doing a hits and misses for that. So you can check that out for Deadline. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me at B_Lee253. My report for the Torch is up at the website and the free site. And if Deadline is next Saturday, then that means I'm going to have to do the freaking report. Ah, crap. But I missed the last PLE, so I guess I deserve this one to have to do. So, yeah, until next week, everybody. See ya.
All right, guys. Hopefully, Kelly will be back with us next week. And, you know, I'm going to be jinxing it right off the bat by saying hopefully we have the whole gang next week, because it's been a few weeks, I think, since we've all been here. But with that, happy Thanksgiving, everybody. And until next time.